you guys. All right, I call to order the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. It is May 10, 2007. May 10, 2007. We have before us the agenda for this meeting. Is there objection to the agenda as stated? Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of Brad?
So moved. Second.
Moved and seconded.
Mr. Questions?
Yes, I'm the manager. Okay, we said we were going to start immediately. Here we are, it's immediately. Okay, Mr. Benjamin, you have a discussion on the minutes?
Yes, I do. First of all, I don't normally suggest changes to minutes, but on item B, as written, there is no approval of the motion. There's only approval of the amendment. And I think we need a record of approval of the motion because it went on to the board and was approved by the board.
All right. We make that correction.
And I have two other points, and they're really for the record, just to make sure that the record is clear. That's a discussion that occurred earlier here. On item A, on the last sentence, I'd like to modify that to say the board has previously approved a reserve, because the board never did approve a $10 million reserve and certainly didn't at that meeting.
Oh, you're on
which
that
page is that?
This is on
FYO 8 budget review.
FY07 monthly operating financial report, page 2.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'd like to also add a discussion that we had very briefly there just to make sure that that's on the record as well. Mr. Benjamin, here's what I suggest. Mr. Benjamin noted that the apparent decline in rail ridership was, as noted in the detailed discussion, an artifact of an accounting change. Mr. Harkin assured him that this affected only 4 days in this fiscal year and would not recur the next year. And a change also in B under FY08 budget review, under the discussion about the 20% reserve balance. I just wanted to have in there that Mr. Benjamin noted that staff already has this authority under the existing claims reserve policy. And both of those are just for the record to assure that those are there.
Mr. General Manager, have you followed all of that sufficient to make these changes?
Yes,
we have. We got the information, all of it.
Okay, is there further
discussion?
I will give you
the notes.
Mr. Graham, perhaps they should just be brought back to the next meeting.
Yeah. Excellent point. And so we'd like to see these corrected minutes. But yes. Further discussion, we'll now view this motion as to approve the minutes as corrected.
Okay, so you don't want to bring back.
We can't do that because they don't have a correction.
Yeah, just I think we just have them just carry it over to the next meeting.
Yeah. Then we won't act on this motion.
Yes, we'll carry it.
All right. Is there further discussion, though, on the minutes? Further discussion. Okay, fine. Now we go to our action items. Reimbursable project for clean, renewable energy, solar program. Mr. Harkin, is Mr. Cato?
Yes, sir.
Good morning. This is an action to amend the budget to put into the capital budget a plan to install solar equipment on the roofs of certain maintenance facilities. This is basically a zero-cost action item to WMATA. It's a pass-through. U.S. Treasury Department's making a little over $14 million available for the installation of the equipment. The interest on those bonds would be paid through tax credit. So WMATA is just a pass-through organization. We get the benefit of having the solar equipment installed on our buildings and potentially slightly lower electricity expenses when the equipment gets up and running.
The discussion, Mr. Benjamin?
I note that there's been a change in the resolution, which actually occurred due to my request. I'd like to modify slightly the statement that Mr. Harkin made. We are not a pass-through organization. We, in fact, do take a small risk in this, in that although the interest is a tax credit, the principal is done through a transaction similar to a tax advantage lease, which does have risk associated with it. So there is language that council has proposed that relates to that, and I would note that it talks only about expectations, not about realities, and it's part of the package. I guess it's a separate page that was put in here.
Do we have this language?
No, it's on page 7.
There's an underlined portion. It certainly was in my package that I got here.
It's a separate, entirely separate statement.
So I wanted to draw that to everybody's attention that what we are doing does in fact
have some risk. Where is the language?
It's underlined on page, on the second page. And I appreciate the fact that council prepared that.
So can you characterize what's the extent of the risk?
The extent of the risk probably should be discussed by by chief financial officer or...
Let's have a description of the extent of the risk.
Mr. Carver, can you explain that?
Good morning. The mechanics of the transaction is that LaMotta is actually the bond issuer of record, and we will issue approximately $15 million in these bonds. They have to be issued by a qualified governmental agency as part of the Clean Renewable Energy Program, so we will be the bond issuer of record. The bonds will actually be paid off by the bond holders, a combination of the bond holders, through tax credits that they receive, so they will pay us. We also, in turn, will be buying a portion of the energy from the out of the solar program, which will, in essence, go into a savings account that we will also use to be able to retire these bonds. So while Peter is right, there is a small amount of risk out there in the event of potentially insolvency of the partnership. It's probably a very limited risk out there. And when we negotiate the operative documents, which we will have to return back to the board with, we'll make sure that we adequately address those risks to make everybody comfortable that that it's a sound program.
Mr. Verbeck, will that be similar to what we did with tax advantage leases, where we have fallback situations in each case?
We'll always tee up two or three different fallbacks.
I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that this is not just money that flows. There is a risk the authority could end up paying part or all of this amount.
What is the exposure?
The exposure tops on this would be $15 million if on day one the program were to go south. We think that that is a very limited risk.
And what would constitute going south?
In the event that, let's say that for some reason that the bondholders could not pay us bonds, pay the principal on the bonds.
Which means those firms would be bankruptcy?
In bankruptcy, right. But, you know, we anticipate these are going to be private placements to very large-scale financial institutions or potentially energy companies.
Have we identified who will do this yet?
Not. Have we identified, Franny? Okay. So we can't identify that quite yet. But at the time we return with operative documents, we can identify those.
So the board will approve the bond issuance with who it is that will be doing the private financing?
Correct.
And what the backup mechanism will be.
And our backup, correct.
Okay.
And say again, now we've got a little bit better handle on the exposure and the risk here. Say again what the benefit is of doing this.
The benefit to WMATA.
Apply it as much as you can.
Yeah, there's a benefit nationally and then a benefit to WMATA. The Department of the Energy and the U.S. Treasury put out a program to sort of jumpstart clean renewable energy bonds and put out an $800 million program. Recall back in April of 2006, we applied for a small allocation of that, and we were awarded $15 million out of that $800 million jumpstart. To us, what it really means is that as part of our environmental stewardship program, we now are supporting clean renewable energy. It is a program that will actually wind up reducing our energy costs. We have a financing consortium who's going to do this for us under a design, build, operate, and maintain program. So it is really no money out of, not necessarily any money out of our pocket. The financing program runs for 20 years with the financing consortium. At the end of 20 years, we own the solar facilities that are going up on the building, on the rooftops. They have a warranted life of 25 years from the point that they are installed, and an anticipated useful life approximately 35 years, 35 to 40 years before they would have to be replaced. We will have a natural energy savings that we calculate for the facilities to start, minimum $75,000 a year. So we have an operating savings on top of this. And then when we finish retiring the bonds at the end of 20 years, we get to capture 100% of that potential savings. So downstream, it will certainly have a very positive impact for us.
So in terms of the quantifiable amount, it's $75,000 a year from the first year.
From year one.
Will that increase with the years of the program?
And the correct. Well, you can imagine that is at today's power rates, sort of comparing solar to what we're paying from our power company out there. Rates are going nowhere but up, so that savings should increase year by year by year.
What is the imposition in terms of construction?
The imposition in terms of construction, truly the one thing that WMATA will be doing, and we very carefully have picked the rooftops that we're going on, is to be able to coordinate the engineering work. We're actually going to be going out in conjunction with our partners to do site surveys. We'll be coordinating the engineering and then the construction. And it's really the construction phase that may be a minimal imposition. We'll have to have some, the escorts, I guess, in and around our buildings to make sure that cranes are set up properly and that we don't interfere with any operations at the facilities.
That's the question of the benefit. In terms of the value of the asset purchased, I'm not saying again, it's low probability, but worst case scenario. Essentially, we put up $15 million and we don't get the money we're supposed to get, so we're out. What do we have in terms of physical assets? I mean, we didn't purchase this thing, right?
Right, we have an asset.
And my question is, that asset isn't worth zero.
Correct.
It may not be worth 15.
It probably is worth 15. Yes. Yes.
And so the worst case scenario is you bought a house and you have the house, and you spent $500,000 and it's worth $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not really risking something. Now, the house might not be worth $500,000. Then you've got something that's at risk, but it's not the whole $500,000 because you've got the house. And I'm trying to understand if that's the situation.
That indeed is the situation. So we'll have six solar facilities on six of our rail maintenance facilities that's worth $15 million.
We will be able to use.
We will be able to use. Correct.
Hopefully you can actually ascribe a present discounted value to.
Sir.
And perhaps by the time of our board meeting, we could have an estimate of what we think the PDD on that is.
I'm sure that I could do that.
But that, I think, when it comes to actual approval at board meeting, would make people more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Monomay and Mr. Barrett.
So a quick question about the Treasury's role in there. Is there any guarantee that the Treasury Department plays in this, or are they just providing the bonding authority?
They're providing, they do not have a backstop from Treasury.
Okay. I have a question. One, I think it's an exciting proposal in terms of putting us in the forefront of the environmental movement. But more specifically about the bonds themselves, in these kinds of transactions, isn't it possible to also purchase insurance that will, first of all, lower the interest rate, and two, protect us? Isn't that possible?
Absolutely. Mr. Benjamin alluded to being able to put some structural backstops in the transaction, and that's certainly one of the options. One of the things that I will remind you is that these are tax-free, or interest-free bonds that are being issued.
Oh, well, that's great.
So it's principal only that we would be arguing about.
I just wanted to make the point that the risk, as I understand it, is very minimal. These are reputable bondholders, mostly institutions probably, that's not about to go bankrupt or not about to default on their payments. I just want the record to show that that's not a worry. I understand Mr. Benjamin's point, but it's not that great a risk. It's mystical, really. As lawyers would say, what's the word, dear?
De minimis.
De minimis. Thank you.
I think it was Mr. Solomon and then Mr. Gene Cola.
Yes,
Mr. Gene Cola.
While I support this project, I would ask in the future when we have briefing sheets put together that we do a little more information or provide more information cost benefit over the life of the project. Because, to be honest with you, $75,000 a year doesn't look like a lot of money. To me, when you look at the cost of this project over 25 years or 35 years, so I'd like more data in the future on projects like this to give us more meat to chew on.
And we're going to bring that information back for full board meeting.
I don't know, you know, I got to say, it reminds me of the solar panels at a school in my ward, which was opened during the Carter administration with much fanfare. The solar panels never worked one day. They're still up there. We're not going to cart them away. I don't want to influence anybody's judgment on this, but I think that the notion that there's going to be sustained value just to this stuff 20 years from now is something that I think we should, you know, somewhat conservatively because of the rampaging technology in this field. Anyway, are you prepared to vote? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Revised.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Benjamin. We're on the underlined revised resolution. Everyone has it?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. And that is approved. Now we'll go to federal FY08 annual DDE goal. Mr. Cato?
Tompkins.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Good morning, Chairman Graham. My name is Carl Brown. I'm the DDE manager for WMATA. And this morning, we are going to seek your approval for the advertisement of the mandated 45-day public comment period for the authority's annual DDE goal. Who must submit an annual DDE goal, and that is any DOT recipient of federal funds, and that is per 49 CFR Part 26. And why must we submit an annual goal? The FTA requires that we submit an annual goal by August 1st of each year. And this year, the federal funds that we anticipate for federal fiscal year 08 are $234,500,000. Next up. The methodology that we use to come up with the annual goal was provided to us by the Department of Transportation. In the numerator, we use ready, willing, and able DBE firms that are in our DBE database, and that is supplemented with the 2002 U.S. Census data of minority-owned firms in the country. The denominator that was used was ready, willing, and able firms total, and that are in our vendor registration system, as well as supplemented by the 2002 U.S. Census data. That's how we come up with the annual goal of 25%. This is just how we calculated it. We calculate the base figure, and then we have 6 years of data available to us. So we take the median of the 6 years to adjust the base figure, and that comes into the historical average of the median of the 6 years of data. That came out to be 25%. Then we have to calculate in the third step the race conscious, race neutral percentage. And then again, you use the 6 years of data whether or not we achieved the goal or we were below. And the median for that was 2%. So our goal is 23% race conscious, 2% race neutral. And for reference, federal fiscal year 07, our goal was 16% with a 1% race neutral and a 15% race conscious. So we've gone up a bit. Our recommendation is that the committee approve a 45-day public comment period on the proposed federal fiscal year 08 DBE goal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brown. First, I want to say, and I don't know whether others are noticing this as well, but our presentations to committees have become so more focused and simplified, getting right to the heart of the issue. You know, a couple of years ago, this presentation would have been a PowerPoint lasting 25 pages, I'm sure of it. And we'd have all been delirious. So this gets right to the heart of things, and I just want to say, on behalf of myself, I can't speak for this distinguished committee, but you know, this is such an improvement. And you know, I've been noticing this in various reports. It's very good. I also want to notice, but first let me ask, you've given us the FFY 07 at 16%. What was 06?
06, I believe it was close to that.
It was like 15, it's like 18, I think.
I have 06. 05 is 21%. 06 was 16%.
And 04, do you have 04?
04 was 21% as well.
Right. Because you confirm my memory here, my recollection. You know, we have struggled over the years. Some of the board members might remember this. And I have been in the forefront of the struggle to get this goal up higher and higher and higher, and it's been resisted. And now this is very pleasant to see 25%. But I must ask, you know, even though it sounds contrary to my point of view on this, and so I have to be a little careful, because I like the higher goal, but when I think of the struggles that we've had in years previous to get it even as high as we got it, I mean, what's the dip here?
Well, the difference is that we're using the current census data, which is 2002, and this is all formula driven, so it's not anything that we sit in the back room and say we're going to raise the goal up. Is based on an actual formula that DOT has given us.
Questions, please?
Mr. Chairman.
For Ms. Hudson, Mr. Barry, Mr. Martinet.
We had this discussion last time, and I think I recall quite clearly your concerns about where the percentage was, but I guess it's not clear to me. Does this percentage reach the attainment in terms of what we actually had as contract? We used the formula provided us by DOT. So.
Well, the past couple of reporting periods that I've seen and submitted to FTA, I came on last July, they have attained the goal as reported to the FTA.
At 16 or greater?
At 16%.
Because I think there was some discussion before, is could we reach a higher goal? We were constrained by the formula, but the question is, once we set that goal.
Right. Well, I've taken steps to help us reach that goal. We have a strong partnership with the procurement department, and we have several outreach efforts that we're planning. We had one last November, and we're planning one for this July to be here at the Jackson Graham Building. But we also participate in all of the jurisdictions, especially in our compact zone, any procurement fairs that are taking place in those regions. We are members of the Minority Supply Development Council as well. So we're taking aggressive steps to make sure that we make this goal.
Okay, Mr. Barry, and then Mr.
Martin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me ask several questions. One, in terms of our performance along Mrs. Huggins' line, in 04, what was our actual performance as a percentage of our goal?
19%. So the goal was 21%, and we obtained 19%.
What about 05?
05, we... goal was 21%, and we actually attained 22.7%.
06?
06, it was 16%, and we obtained 18.5%.
In terms of the 25%, is that a floor or is it a ceiling?
It's a floor.
You understand the differences?
Yeah.
Which means the authority, if it were more vigorous, could go beyond 25%.
Yes.
And we certainly would try to encourage that situation. And, Chairman, I'd like to, not necessarily at this meeting, but sort of meet with Mr. Brown just to see what the outreach is, because sometimes there's a more additional thing that can be done to reach this disadvantaged community in the region and in the city. Because the D.C. government has a local, small disadvantaged business. We want to look and compare that list of vendors and suppliers with your list and sort of see if there's a way to reach out further. And I like to go way beyond 25%, quite frankly, but we're close. What happened the year we didn't make it? What was that about? You got 19% rather than 21%?
Well, I wasn't here, so I don't know.
I'd like to assure you, Mr. Brown is very aggressive.
I'm not implying he's not. Facts, you know.
A lot of it's related to volume. Contract volume.
Yes.
No, it's not related to that. It's the volume. If volume is down, the percentage is still 21%. And so we reach 19%, right?
Yes.
21%, so it's not volume. It has to do with outreach and people getting into the system to take advantage of this situation. That's what it's all about. Now, no offense, I'm not questioning Mr. Brown. He wasn't even here. But somebody was here. Maybe. I'm just encouraging.
We were here.
Us to be more vigorous, and not that we're not vigorous. And like I said, meet with you just to give some ideas about where we can go to expand this capacity situation. What do we do about technical assistance for DBs?
Yes, the event that we had in November, we had seminars on bonding and insurance, financial assistance from banks. And this time, we're going to have the same thing, basically. We're going to have banking and finance on how to get loans. Second series of seminars is going to be on bonding and insurance so that the construction companies, in particular, will then get a handle on how they qualify for bonding and the proper amount of insurance that they would need, because we have high standards as far as insurance here at WMATA. The third seminar is going to be on how to target market to the federal government, because a lot of our DBEs want to target the federal government as well as state and local. And the fourth series of seminars is going to be on personal financing, because there are differences in when you own a business on how much you can put away on in a 401k. So we wanted to bring that to their attention as well. So your personal finances in order, and your business finances will benefit as well.
Bonding and insurance, et cetera, hits the construction side. What about the supplier side? Do you see a need for any technical assistance in that area?
Well, this is going to be just an ongoing series. And
I'd like to add something to that. Add something to that. You know, the suppliers too.
Okay.
The metro procures a number of suppliers that don't have anything to do with bonding or insurance. It has to do with knowledge about how you can make your business more efficient. How do you even, you know, learn more about this business? Because most of the DBEs that I know about are first-time business owners. They don't have a history of sitting around a dinner table talking about performers and et cetera. So I'd like to sort of just suggest you look at that.
In addition, we're going to have these procurement supply people here talking to the vendors one-on-one. Seminars are going to take place in the boardroom. And in the meeting room, we're going to have our prime contractors like Clark Construction and others, Parsons, et cetera, to talk to the vendors one-on-one about how to subcontract with them to work on some of the projects that we have here, as well as our procurement folks to talk to them about how to market to WMATA to be more successful.
What kind of reporting system do we have to keep track of whether or not these DBEs are actually getting the work as opposed to being part of a contract that says they're going to get the work? What do we do?
Part of our charge under the DBE program is to do contract compliance. So we have to go and inspect the canceled checks from the prime contractors.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Thank you, Mr. Barry. And Mr. Monomack?
Just one quick question. I think you're right about the materials being very focused, but I think it would have saved some of the questioning if we would have had the actuals listed on the document with the goal. I think it would have cut out some of the information. So if you could just report back the actuals compared to the goal for the year, I think we'd get a complete picture before it's not spent. No comments. I think we'll submit the next report.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that having been through this discussion for now, this is the ninth year, you know, and I don't want to get into this in great detail, but the fact of the matter is that at no time in those 9 years has the commitment of this board been clearer than it is today on these issues. And it's a wonderful feeling, I've got to say, because when I think back to some of the debates we've had in the past, you know, our support for this is, I think, unequivocal. And certainly we're joined by our general manager in that commitment. So it's a very nice feeling to have all of this in place in this way this year. Okay, well, you seem anxious to say something.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman.
I intuit your body language.
Yeah, thank you. I thank you for speaking of my commitment, and I am personally committed to this. I think Mr. Brown, I don't think I know, he's a great addition to this organization. And we're not only going to work from the standpoint of outreach, we're going to review our procurement processes to ensure that they meet all state and local statutes, but at the same time to ensure that they don't have in place barriers that hampers businesses from doing business with us. And we will report back to you, and I will be meeting with Mr. Brown for updates to ensure we're not only meeting the goal, but we're exceeding in our efforts in bringing in various businesses, particularly disadvantaged and minority businesses, in working with us.
Great. I appreciate it. I know the Federal Transit Administration doesn't care about our small contract program, which is aimed at local businesses, but we care very much about it. So don't forget that effort, because that last November, which I attended, was about that. These contracts under $100,000 are very important. And one of these days, I'd like a close analysis of just what's actually happened under that contract. In fact, why don't I request it now? Mr. Cato, give me
I took that as a request, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
Let's see some, you know, along the lines of what Mr. Barry is talking about, you know, let's see the pudding. You know, not just the promise of it. I'd like to have a report on that very, very much. Okay, further discussion on this, further discussion?
Chairman, could Mr. Brown let us know when these seminars are being held, so those of us who want to come can come.
Yes, sir.
And Ms. Hewlett, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Graham, and thank you very much, Mr. Brown. I'm positive that you will continue aggressive outreach. And one thing I wanted to note was that for the 2 years, in 04 and 05, we had a 21% goal, and in 05, we exceeded it with 22.7, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And then we dropped down to a 16% goal in 06 and 07, but I'm presuming you said that's still formula-driven, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Anyway, I know that you'll do a great job, and Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the 45-day public comment period.
Second. Seconded by Mr. Barry, moved by Ms. Hewlett. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those no, the ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Brown. Now we're going to move by request to the FY08 budget review because some members have to go, so we will pass the two information items momentarily if that's not objectionable to you, Mr. Cato, and we will go to the FY08 budget review.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. In January, I said
what page are we on?
49.
What?
49.
Just 1 second, Mr. Cato. Here we are, page 48 is the beginning, 49 is the substance. I'm sorry, Mr. Cato, continue, please.
Thank you. This is just some opening remarks that are really up on the screen. When I accepted the position in January when I came on board, I said we would review all expenditures in an attempt to close the gap. If you recall, we had a budget gap of approximately $116 million, so it was. And this budget reflects the actions that we've taken, as well as actions that we're asking the board to take to close that gap, included our reductions in expenditures, reductions in staffing, and the use of one-time funds to bring us within the budget without a fare increase nor service reductions. How do we close this gap? Again, I want to emphasize, we use one-time funds, including $40 million from the Virgin Time judgment, and those are monies returned to the 103-mile construction budget per the FTA recommendations. Since that budget was fully funded, the $40 million was transferred to the 5,000 series rail car budget, and this program was funded in part with tax advantage lease proceeds. Now, the FTA allows us to use those proceeds for either capital or operating. However, in the past, this board put some restrictions on the use of those dollars and mandated that they be used for rail capital, which means in order to transfer the $40 million to operating, we need to bring back to you an action to allow us to use these dollars to close the gap, part of the $116 million gap. And we will go into more detail of that when we bring back the resolution in June. In addition, $12 million was removed from the proposed budget that we stated that we needed to replace some of our reserve funds. So we have, again, we're operating very tightly and on a shoestring reserve. $13 million is included or reduced as a result of staff reductions and across-the-board percentage cuts to expenditures for the entire agency. $12 million in deferred revenues and additional revenues that Mr. Huckin will go into detail. But, Mr. Chairman, I just would like to reemphasize to this board that this is a very fragile budget. This is a one-time fix. And I believe I heard the comment from you before, there's no other rabbits that we can pull out of the hat. This is it. We pull all the rabbits, we pull all the one-time funds. In the future, as we move forward to a future budget, we need to identify additional revenues. This fall, as I've stated before, we'll bring back to this board recommendations on possible ways to increase revenues, including an index fare policy, a look at are we maximizing the use of our lands and our parking structures with some recommendations for consideration, additional advertising revenues. On the other side, we have to manage our costs. All managers this coming year will receive training in the development and managing of their budgets down to the lowest possible level. And not only will receive training, but will be held accountable for expenditures. So we will be watching every dollar in overtime and travel and any other expenses that we have to ensure that we not only come within this budget, but look for ways to come below this budget. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Huckin will go into the details of this budget, but again, I just want to emphasize that we're making every effort to reduce expenditures, and we do believe we have many opportunities to do so in the upcoming year.
Mr. Cato, perhaps if we could pause at this big picture level and see if the board has comments at that level. And I know Mr. Newell has other pressing commitments, and so I will call on you first, sir.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Mr. Cato and his staff for his comments and the presentation we're going to receive, but also for the hard work in terms of attempting to balance the budget without having to raise fares, and knowing that, as you said, this is fragile. We understand that, but I think what's also important for all of us around the table that represents the jurisdiction we serve, so is our budget's fragile. And because of the downturn in the real estate market and all the other challenges that we face with budget cuts from both state and federal. So, we all need to be working at this in collaboration and partnership, because none of us have the resources available to continue to just spend. So, like Metro is doing, So have we as jurisdictions, but then cost-effective and efficient in terms of, you know, cutbacks and so forth. But that being said, my real question is the $40 million that you've identified from the litigation, is that money in the bank, or is that yet to be transferred, to be reimbursed, to be paid?
I would call it money in the bank. It, there's various components to it, but it seems to be a sure thing, and I want to put a special thanks out to our FTA guy, Brian Glenn, who's here this morning. He's been very helpful in working with us on all the administrative technical stuff that has to happen, but I think we can count on it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Mr. Bancho?
I guess I'd like to follow up on the money in the bank. That's a, and I'd also like to discuss very briefly the issue of the fragile budget. I think your point is an extremely important one, and you've done an excellent job in pulling this all together. Let me do the last one first, and then go back to the money in the bank. I think what you're saying to us is this gets us through this year, but next year is going to be a real challenge.
That's an understatement. I said challenge.
Normally, we would have a pro forma that would say, what does the next year look like? Do we have one of those that the board could look at or get sometime soon so we at least understand the nature of that challenge and what potential ways you have for meeting it?
Certainly, by the next meeting, we could have that ready.
Okay, if we can have it before the meeting so we can take a look at it and be ready to ask some questions based on it.
Yes.
I'm going back to the $40 million and where that came from. This is all rail construction funding, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it is constrained by sort of the same things we were just talking about with Metro Matters. It's constrained by ICCA 4 and 5 and by a federal full funding grant agreement.
Yes.
Okay. If I understand, Mr. Cato, what you said was that you were going to do an accounting transaction to apply this.
Yes, we're going to do the account. We'll go into the details, but we are going to do an accounting transaction that will apply the dollars to the Series 5000 rail vehicles. And we did use some tax advantage funds for those vehicles, and we would transfer the monies from the tax advantage lease proceeds to the operating budget, but that requires an action by the board to give us that approval, because in past action you restricted the use of those funds.
That was pretty good. You should work in the budget office.
That's fine. Let me just repeat it so I'm sure I understand it. What we're doing is we're saying we're replacing tax advantage lease funds that were used for 5,000 series rail cars.
Yes.
With the money from the Morgantown settlement.
Yes.
We're then going to those and saying, well, we originally said the board actually had a resolution that said that that tax advantage lease money had to be spent on rail cars.
Yes.
And we're going to override the board's previous decision and say, no, now we're going to instead spend it on operating budget. And
that we're asking the board to override your previous decision.
And that would be where we would go when we approve the budget.
Yes.
So it's a two-step process. One is an accounting one. I guess that's okay, because constraint, of course, in ICCA 5 and 4 is that you would have jurisdictional approval required in the same way as with Metro Matters if you move the money. But in this particular case, you're just doing an accounting transaction.
That
would work, and I think it's important for the board then to reaffirm that accounting transaction and replace its prior set of priorities for purchase of 5,000 series rail cars, which has to be done. But there's also a federal interest, which is part of the full funding grant agreement. The federal government presumably would have some of that money that they would have a claim on. Have they totally relinquished that claim? You mentioned that they were being cooperative.
Yes, that's what we've been working with Brian Glenn's here to break the $40 million into its component pieces. There was $7 million, almost $8 million left unexpended in the balance here, but the remaining 32 is split between 26 federal money and $6-7 million in local money, and that 26 million
said that the 26 million is currently available to this authority.
Yes.
So that's all approved and all taken care of.
There's still some technical stuff we have to do with the team system at FTA, but no one's raising objections to it.
So by the time we get to approval of the budget, we will absolutely have all of that approval in place.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Zimmerman.
I appreciate that Mr. Cato has been extremely candid in this and explaining that
you know, this is a one-time approach to a budget. It isn't the sort of thing that you could do every year, or that he would do every year, that any of us would do every year. It is justified in this case as a transitional budget, because, not only because we didn't, any of us, like the, you know, the proposal that was before us at the end of last year, that wasn't the way anybody really wanted to go, and we're looking for something different. It's that, in fact, an entirely different approach to this agency has been undertaken. And, you know, right from the beginning, when he came into office, the general manager said, basically, he was going to relook at the whole thing and find, you know, different ways to approach things, and that that will be long-lasting. And so, and it's not just now a promise, that's a reality. He's actually put it in place, and including some very painful things that had to be done in the last week. And that means that there are, in fact, long-term savings being made. And one of the things to note in the budget adjustments before us is that the actual impact for FY07 of those 200-plus reductions is comparatively small. You don't get a lot of first-year impact. I mean, some, but a lot of the impact you don't get because there are expenses associated with it the first year. You get that savings, however, more fully realized in FY08. And because of that, that by itself is justification for some one-time actions for FY07. You have some, you know, one-time benefits. I mean, they essentially cancel each other out. And that is, I think, part of what justifies it. There's more long-term savings in the reduction of such positions than there is immediate savings. If we were, you know, if we were not looking at doing anything differently, we might well be troubled about, you know, an approach to budget that just is getting you through 1 year. But in fact, we know that this is involving a top-to-bottom reexamination of the organization, some changes in priorities, some reductions in activities that we've been undertaking previously that had significant expenses associated with them. So I think overall that it's a reasonable and responsible way to approach the budget. And again, I appreciate the fact that the general manager has reminded us again that next year, a whole new challenge, and there will be things. For instance, we're not having a fare increase this year. That does not mean there won't ever be fare increases. And I think the general manager has rightly made the point that over time, like everything else, fares will have to adjust with the economy in some manner, and he has indicated he will bring to us a policy proposal that would provide for sort of rational, regular, predictable increases in fares, something that I won't support. I wanted that to be noted that, you know, this isn't simply a matter of scraping together something to get through 1 year. It actually does fit logically and rationally into an overall approach to having a sustainable budget over time.
Thank you. And if I may add to that, Mr. Zimmerman, is that, and I don't know to what extent you wish to even, you know, mention some of the ideas that we have, because there is some very substantial thinking about 09 that does not necessarily involve, you know, fair adjustments at all. And, you know, and I think our commitment to that type of appreciation for our ridership is extremely important. And, you know, we were about to, we had a staff recommendation that would have put these fare increases in place, put in fare policy in place that would have resulted in increases. You know, there was some very strong argument about this last fall, which I, for one, remember very well. And we don't, we're not necessarily on that track, are we?
Well, Mr. Chairman, first, there are some creative approaches that our staff have worked on, and I want to emphasize this is not John Cato, this is the entire staff of the organization. On the issue of the fares, we are going to bring various options back to this board this fall for policy direction, and it's my job to recommend all revenue enhancement activities, including a fare adjustment. But those discussions would take place later, and we did get off. We're able to dodge the bullet for the fare increases July.
But even though I may have suggested the metaphor, this is really not about rabbits. You know, right. I mean, this yeah. is, you know, in any sense of the word.
But I like your quote, sir.
Right, I know. It had a certain ring to it. But the fact of the matter is that what we're dealing here with here is a very substantive
yes.
Set of set of policies that results in the avoidance of affair issues. And I think if we continue to think in those creative ways in the future, it'll be much to the benefit of our ridership, which is certainly not about rabbits. Okay, we're not transporting any rabbits that we know of.
I'm not even sure
they're permitted on the system, are they? Can you bring a rabbit on the system?
Not unless it's an assist rabbit, and I'm not aware of any that
we have. That means I get to mention Jimmy Carter for the second time. Do you remember the attack rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, enough of these memories. Do we need further information on this? Is everybody...
I had a couple more questions.
Well, let me just make sure everybody else has had a chance to speak, because we spent so much time on rabbits. Okay, so back to you, Mr. Benjamin.
The other area where I was a little bit concerned was the deferred revenue, and I would appreciate if we could have a table that just gives us information on how the deferred revenue has grown over the last few years and what the write-off of deferred revenue has been, so we have some sense of the risk we're taking by recognizing $12 million of deferred revenue.
We actually made a presentation to Budget Committee a couple of months ago and went through that in some great detail. I'm happy to get you that presentation. There was tremendous discussion on that matter.
I'm sorry that I wasn't here at that time.
No.
We don't know about that.
We'll get it
Thank
for you.
You. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we thank you very much for your presentation. And there being no further questions, we can now proceed to the... Should we go back to the information items? Do you want to do this in that orderly kind of way? Stay with the subcategory? Okay. All right, the RAC recommendations on the FY08 budget. Mr. Harcum.
Michael's here, and he's going to come up to the table this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I just saw these. Very good. It's good to have you here. This is to be found on page 54.
It's a separate document.
Separate document.
Do you have your appendix?
That's it. Oh, here it is. Okay. Everybody got the document? It's a separate document. Okay.
Mr. Graham, yes. For the record, my name is Michael Snyder. I'm the chair of the Writers Advisory Council. I'd like to thank the board for giving us this opportunity. This is actually the first RAC presentation to a board committee meeting. We've done reports at your board meetings, but I hope that this will be an opportunity for us to be able to share with you some of the research and some of the discussions that go on in our meetings. So if we can move on, we're on to the second one.
Well, but we don't want, we're very much in this mood of abbreviation.
Yes.
Can you get into that spirit with us?
I sure will.
So that we don't lapse back into old ways.
That would be great.
Because you have about 20 pages here.
No, right? I have 14 pages, but I will go through it very, very rapidly. First of all, there was a lot of work put into this presentation, hundreds of hours of people from the public, from members of the RAC, and the Metro staff. Rick Harcum worked very closely with us. He gave us a budget. On to the next slide. We're moving along. Rick Harcum gave us a Budget 101 presentation. We spent two Saturday mornings doing a lot of brainstorming and trying to organize our thoughts. And what we tried to do is get a high-level view of recommendations for policy. So we drafted a number of policies. On to the next slide. We have a smart trip policy that we'd like the board to consider, a fare policy, late-night service, and retail. All of these things are not necessarily going to be used in the 8 budget, but they will help out with the 9 budget, and some of these things Mr. Cato and his staff are already looking into. So I appreciate their participation in all the work that we've done. Smart trip policy. The RAC supports extended use of smart trip throughout Metro and the region. The following conditions must be met prior to differentiating fares based on smart trip. We want Metro to do a better job of marketing Smart Trip. We want them to have clearer information. We want them to look at ways to eliminate the cost, that $5 cost of actually buying the card. And we want them to look at replacing those $10 machines with $20 machines. Most people don't have $20 things. There's other things that we want to do. We want to see them tied to budget, to debit and credit cards. People carry those around. We want them to look at the same ease of use that you have with an Easy Pass. In other words, be able to add money through the internet or at local retailers or wherever you need to be able to do that, and to be able to save some of the cost of those cards. Look for branding it. I don't care if it says, Chevy Chase Bank on the card or whatever it says on the card, as long as, I don't have to pay that $5. There are some significant benefits that can be realized by pushing Smart Trip, and we recognize those things. Faster entrance and exit from the system, both on trains and on buses. Recovered revenue that you're losing. There's money that's being lost from transfers and from people that are using passes improperly, and we think that that will help to definitely help out with the budget process. Cash processing is an expensive thing for the Metro, and we encourage Metro to find whatever ways they can to be able to save money so our fares don't go up. And if there's easier ways to be able to put the money on the card and be able to do that, then that's definitely going to help out from the rider's perspective. There's also the ability to be able, with the new technology that they've talked to a bit with us, there's going to be ways for you to be able to offer discounts and passes and other techniques that will encourage riders to do reverse commutes or to use off-peak parking or to use the system in off-peak, which will increase your ridership and ultimately increase your revenues. On the fare policy, the RAC supports a fare policy that encourages the use of underutilized resources, encourages the use of public transportation over driving, and is not punitive towards those who totally depend on transportation services. So when you start looking at your fare policy, we need you to make sure that what you come up with is simple and easy to understand for those people who are locals, as well as the visitors to our nation's capital, as well as for the ADA community. Okay? We'd like you to market passes better. Passes are a great opportunity for you to be able to have some revenue that will definitely keep costs down for the riders, as well as assure Metro of getting good funding. Next thing, we recognize that there's going to be fare increases. When you pick an indicator that you want to tie the fare increases to, we would prefer that it be based on wages rather than cost of goods, because wages are something that, hits our pocketbook. So, if we understand our wages are going to go up, then we understand that we can pay a little more for our fares. We also want to make sure that whatever indicator you tie to, that it is also tied to the jurisdictional contributions. So if we're going to pay more money as riders, we want the jurisdictions also to be tied to those same indicators, if not more aggressive ones. And we'd like to find ways for Metro to encourage off-peak ridership when they look at what their fare policies are. Two last things that I'd like to propose is the RAC urges Metro to explore using shuttle-type service and implement demand response-type routes as ways to provide more cost-efficient transportation using late-night bus operations and other periods of low demand. We've been told a number of times that on some of these late-night routes, it's cheaper for Metro to pay for somebody to take a taxi than to be running one of those 40-foot buses down the street. If Metro can eliminate some routes and provide demand response type vehicles to be able to get people where they need to go using the next bus service, so I can say I'm at this bus stop and I need to go to this bus stop, then they can run one of those emergency response type vehicles that they use to support the ADA community when a bus doesn't work. So I think Metro needs to come up with some creative ways to be able to cut some of the late night service but still be able to provide the riders with the need that they have to get from destination A to destination B. When retail and rental, there are services that Metro could provide at their rail stations and at bus transit locations, dry cleaners, the ability to be able to buy non-food type items, and we encourage Metro to look at those types of services and also see if they can realize some revenue from those things. So the RAC encourages Metro to explore allowing retail sales of non-food items within the transit system. And then finally, advertising policy was a major issue that we wanted to present a policy on, but I've got very conflicting ideas from my various RAC members about whether or not we should increase advertising. We know that Mr. Cato has recommended a $3 million increase in revenue. The people who I work with say, you know, you can plaster the system with as much advertising as you want as long as I don't have to pay more money. There's other people on the RAC who figure, you know, this is a place that we want to be able to be, you know, it's like a monument, and they really don't want to see lots of advertising. So we're seeing the same things within my riders community that you all are seeing, and hopefully over the next month or so we'll come up with an advertising policy that represents across the board what the riders want. And then finally, moving forward, the RAC appreciates being part of WMATA's budget process and is willing to provide input to budget recommendations as they impact fares and alignment of transportation services, and as Metro offers expanded services within its transit properties. Thank you very much for giving us this time.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Snyder. I very much appreciate that this is the first committee that this has happened with, and I'm glad it's happened here. These are extremely important issues, and we want your advice and counsel on those issues. I just had one question.
Sure.
Because although your testimony does raise various questions in my mind, but one I want to focus on immediately is whatever happened to our retail demonstration projects? I mean, where are we on all of that? Because I remember we had some stations that I know very well that were slated for.
Well, we did go out for a request for interest, and we did not receive very many. And as a result, we have redefined and looked at what we're sending out again. I think it's clearer and easier for people to use our facilities for other than food use. We expect to get those back in. Chuck, if you could help me with that.
Yeah, let me address a number of the issues. We talked a little bit about this on the budget go forward plan. We issued an expression of interest yesterday to invite the private sector to come and talk with us about what are the opportunities to have a strategic real estate plan. And what that really means is, are our real estate assets supporting the mission of the authority? Can we generate more revenue? Can we lease less space? Can we replace older facilities with newer facilities? My example is when I was in Fairfax County Schools, we went through a process like this. They now have a new new school admin building that's worth $63 million. They have increased debt capacity of $125 million, and they have 15 old facilities that are now back on the tax rolls in Fairfax County. It was a different goal. It was replacing multiple facilities with one facility, but I think that's a huge opportunity for Metro, and hopefully it'll take pressure off the budget in future years. This expression of interest is also asking the private sector to come in and address our parking. Many public sector organizations have outsourced parking.
Those are interesting points, but that's going to do my question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're answering some other question.
Well, I was highlighting our go-forward plan on the budget. The RFP on the revenue and marketing, Mr. Graham, is that we did put one out. We didn't get that great a response. We are going to reissue such a document, a request for proposal. I suspect it'll be into the fall before we have that back and analyzed and recommendations to the board. But
can we get a report? Not now, but can you give us a more specific report on what the response was to
yes.
our? I mean, let us have an idea of what's good. Aren't you interested in that?
Mr. Chairman, if we could also know, I know there was some discussion about what we were getting responses to, because there was a debate about whether or not we wanted to include the provision of food as an option. And we want to get a sense of what could we get if we offer that service adjacent to our facilities, and we want to be able to compare and make a decision about the benefit versus the impact. Correct.
Well, no, I think it's in.
It is in. Let us respond to the first part of the question, and then we will also explain to you exactly what we're going back out with.
Yeah. And this is Mr. Snyder's times, but I thought you might be interested in the answer to that.
I'm very interested in
because you've done us a favor by raising it, and so I just wanted to get a little better. So will you have something for us next time?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Good. Any further discussion with Mr. Snyder? Well, we thank you all very
thank
much.
You.
We thank you, Mr. Snyder, very much. Would you please convey to the Writers Advisory Council our appreciation for all this hard work that you're putting in?
I sure will. Thank you.
All right, good. Now we have to return to our agenda, which is the... I guess we're back to information
items.
Right. So, FY07 monthly operating financial report. Mr. Harcum?
I'll be very brief. At the end of February, we've got a budget overrun of $3.9 million. This is consistent with what's been going on all year. We've been alerting people to the fact that the budgets are coming in, or the revenue is coming in under budget. We think we've adjusted for that in FY08. There's an existing $10 million reserve that we hope will cover most of this. The most important numbers on the page are right here. It shows that consistently through the year now, bus and rail ridership growth is hovering around 1%. It's been a little below, a little above, but it's kind of stabilizing at that 1% rate, and that's basically what we're rolling into the 08 budget for growth rates at this point. The only other big news from February is I think the disastrous results in revenue here were associated with the bad weather. We had 4 snowstorms and 2 terrible ice storms, and people just stayed home.
Okay. Questions, Mr. Benjamin?
First of all, Mr. Harkin, let me compliment you and your staff for an excellent write-up on the ridership and why the ridership was effective and the revenue was effective the way it was.
Thank you.
That was very well done. In looking at this, one of the things that you have brought up several times in a row now is contributions to pension plans and that they are well above budget. Normally, you know pretty well what your contributions will be to pension plans. What was the reason that this year we apparently didn't?
It was a 689 plan. There was an actuarial study that came in late, and it's just hitting our books now, beginning in January, I believe. So we're seeing January, February, through the end of the year, over budget contributions. We believe we've adjusted for that in the 08 budget.
Okay, that was my second question. And the other part of that, then, is also, so if this is now in the 08 budget, we're looking at a $4 million overrun in the subsidy this far into the year.
Yes.
I know you're going to put severance pay on top of that,
mm-hmm.
and additional revenue losses on top of that. What are our odds of staying within the $10 million you have available?
Oh, I'd say slim to none.
So we're looking at a potential audit adjustment?
Yes, sir.
Which would also affect 09?
Yes, sir.
So we're saying that our 09 problem, which we just identified as being extremely fragile, is even more fragile because the demands on the jurisdictions for subsidy increases will be even higher.
Yes, sir. And all I can say is as we close out FY07, I'm sure you're aware of the June 30th adjustments that are possible, and we're going to be working with the accounting office to see if there's anything we can do to mitigate the actual results this year, just kind of the technical accounting cleanup activities that go on.
Mm-hmm. Would you consider potentially splitting your severance pay numbers in order to stay within the $10 million?
I think we'll look at that and everything else we could possibly look at.
Because as I see it right now, 09 is going to be an extremely difficult year for the authority. I know in the state of Maryland, voluntarily, it's an extremely difficult year, and this will take whatever we do and make it that much worse.
I hear the message loud and clear, and we're going to do everything we can to minimize the 07 difficulties.
Okay. Further discussion? Thank you, Dr. Lee. And now we go to the FY07 quarterly CIP financial report.
Just quickly jump into page 39, I believe it is, to just break down the Metro Matters capital budget into its 3 major components: the infrastructure renewal program, the railcar program, and the bus program. The IRP section is actually doing gangbusters. They're right now a little bit ahead of their spending plan. Back up one page, please. They're a little bit ahead of their spending plan. We believe it'll be fine by year end. The railcar program, there's long-standing delays that have been going on with the delivery of the 6,000 series cars. However, if you get a chance to be out on I-270 on Wednesday night around 10 p.m., it's kind of cool to see the railcars coming down on flatbed tractor trailers.
So they're on the way. The car deliveries are picking up, and the inventory is growing. So we expect that this delay here that's causing that slippage is really going to catch up with itself. The bus program, that is largely driven by issues with the West Ox bus garage right now, and I'm checking on some invoices, which I think should have hit for the procurement of buses, which have already been delivered. I really don't have any concerns about that. The next page is just a quick snapshot of where we are on the matter of debt service. What you can see here in the actual section is how much debt has actually been issued to date. In 05 and 06, no commercial paper needed to be issued. There was sufficient cash on hand to pay all the invoices. So far this fiscal year, the authority has issued $80 million of commercial paper. I anticipate that will go up between now and June 30th, and we've been using internal borrowing, just cash on hand, to the extent possible. So bad news is we're going into debt. Good news is we're not going into debt as deeply as we thought we would.
Discussion? Discussion? Well, then that concludes our agenda. You can see the subsequent committee agendas, and you see, of course, that our June 14th meeting will involve a committee vote on the FYA budget, and that's that. So is it, there will be no further business to come before the committee. I just want to especially acknowledge Mr. Harcum. Thank you very much for being here today.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that, and thank you all for being here today. And so with that, it is now 11:20 on the same day we started, and the meeting is